I was fortunate enough when I was 13 to be part of the original Science of Mind Church in Los Angeles, and Dr. William Hornaday was the minister there, and it was quite an experience. I sang in the choir, and we had people like Peggy Lee and Louis Armstrong, Anne Francis, who was a famous actress at the time, and it was a really great introduction. So I'm thankful for that. Our chapter today is on finances, and when I first glanced at it, it seemed like kind of a dry subject to me, but it's actually a wonderful chapter because it has so much information in it in applying the Science of Mind principles to the subject of finances and way of life. So this chapter is about what we are thinking and feeling about our finances, and also about givingness and also service to others, which I think is an important part of the finances. So Dr. Holmes says, you get what you are thinking about, and he stresses the need to look beyond what you're currently experiencing, and instead, he says, for you to tell the story in a different way. And it always makes me think about, at any point in time, whatever's happening with us, good or bad, there are always two ways of looking at it and expressing it, both to ourselves and to other people. You can always stop and say, you know, which part do I want to tell the story of? You know, the poor me, or, gee, you know, this experience happened, and this is what I'm learning from it, and this is how I'm moving forward. So that's always an opportunity that we have. Ernest Holmes says that your financial success already exists, but awaits your seeing it and accepting it as your own. And from the book Money and the Law of Attraction by the teachings of Abraham, the subject of money is really two subjects. One is money, plenty of money, the feeling of freedom and ease that plenty of money can provide. And I always hear in my head how when you listen to the Abraham tapes and when she goes on about the absence of money, you know, not enough money, not enough money, not enough money. And it goes on and on, not enough money, not enough money. And, you know, you can just feel, you know, that downward feeling of it. And then she moves over into expressing Abraham with a positiveness of having money and ease. So that really made an impression in my mind when I listened to those. So what are you really thinking about, and more importantly, what are you feeling about your finances? Do you find yourself saying things like, wow, that's something really nice, I'd like to have that. Oh, but I can't really afford it. And if that's what you're saying, then you're not vibrationally matched to what it is you desire. So two things can let you know whether you're pointed toward the plenty of money or the absence of money. And the first one is the negative emotion you feel when you think of the absence of money. And guess what the second one is? Look at your bank account. Either the lack or the abundance of your finances will tell you where you are. Abraham says you have to find a way of feeling the essence of what you desire before the details of that desire can come to you. In other words, you have to begin to feel more prosperous before more prosperity can come. And that can begin by telling a different story. As you begin to feel freer regarding the expenditures of time and money, doors will open, people will come to assist you, refreshing and productive ideas will occur to you, and circumstances and events will unfold. As you change the way you feel, you access the energy that creates worlds. It is there for your ready access at any time, with freedom, growth, and joy. Now back to our chapter, Holmes tells us to always bless our money as we spend it or pay our bills. Silently bless your money as you spend it, for then it carries with it an intangible value which will come back to you. And I believe it will also be forwarded to those that you pay it to. Learn to bless your bills as you pay them. They indicate the good you have received, and they express the faith others have in you. It's important not only to be of service to others, but to also share what you have received. When you give intelligently and generously from what you have for the good of others, you may be absolutely certain that there will be a spiritual response and concrete goodwill will come rushing back to fill that empty space. And he said, if you wish to spend money on something that will start you in a new and worthy service, even though you are spending your last dollar, use it wisely, freely, and happily. And I did just that. I started a new business. Now, this all happened about a year ago. And at the time that it happened, I was grieving over the loss of my precious little Carlos, was my heart kitty. And so I'm still going through the grieving process. So this came at a really great time in my life that I started noticing different articles about the plight of the bees and the butterflies and the birds and how their habitats were being taken over by construction of big suburbs and malls and so on. And so it had reached a point where it's, you know, we're losing bees, we're losing some of our wildlife due to all of this. So I started reading more things about it, and all of a sudden I realized that a whole new world opened up to me, the world of native plants. I began learning what I didn't know that I didn't know. I was in landscaping for 25 years. I did landscape design, both commercial and residential. I did the installation. I had my own company. I didn't know anything about native plants. You know, it just never crossed my my experience. So this was a whole new thing for me. I thought I had learned all about the birds and the bees, but boy, was I surprised. I had a lot to learn. So about that time, I got a catalog in the mail, and it's called the Prairie Moon Nursery. And this was a special edition that I got that was about native seeds and plants. So this is actually this year's. This was an older one. When I first opened it up, the first thing that I saw was this circle of life. Here it is on my shirt. Prairie Moon Nursery. So that looked really intriguing. And so it says, the circle of life. Native plants co-evolved with native insects and wildlife. They are deeply dependent on one another. Plants provide food and shelter to insects, birds, and other small animals, which in turn support larger predators. Native plants are building blocks, fundamental stepping stones of a healthy ecosystem. Keep the circle complete, plant natives. Well, Science of Mind, as Kai mentioned in her last talk, teaches the unity of all life. And I've always felt that all my life. And I remember, I think in my teenage years, I read a book called The Kinship of All Life. Mm-hmm. And that really resonated to me. So this resonated to me too, that in the circle of life, that in, while they're mentioning, you know, everything from the birds and the bees and the foxes and all the wildlife, you know, we're included in there. Mm-hmm. This is our circle of life too. So, and it says that 90% of insects, including pollinators, require a native plant host to complete their life cycle. And it doesn't mean that they can't survive off of some of the non-natives, which basically are called alien plants. But a lot of them cannot reproduce. For example, the monarch butterfly can exist on different flowers, but they have to be on a milkweed or a butterfly weed in order to reproduce. And so if there's not enough of those plants around, then they begin to diminish in populations. Parent birds must gather thousands of these insects to raise a single clutch of their babies. Predators like fox feed on animals like birds, smaller mammals, reptiles, and amphibians, all of whom eat insects as an important part of their diet. So the circle goes around. Decomposers like carrion beetles, mushrooms, and soil microbes return nutrients from animals and plants to the earth. Help keep the circle unbroken, plant natives. Whether it's a few square feet or several acres, we can all make a difference. Well, they had me hooked. And then, you know, I started going through the catalog, and there's just all of these absolutely gorgeous pictures of all these native plants. Because I wasn't quite sure which plants were native and which weren't. So this is a butterfly weed and a monarch butterfly on it. See that. So that really got me interested in finding out about it. Well, I saw how beautiful all these plants were there, and I recognized a lot of them. And what I discovered was that my yard already had native plants growing in it. I just didn't call them by that name because I have different varieties of sedums. I have coreopsis, black-eyed Susans. I even have butterfly weeds, and I didn't know that was a native plant or its purpose. It's just, I thought it was great. It's a bright orange and beautiful plant, and they're all perennials and easy care. Well, along with the ones I have, also herbs, most herbs are in that category. But there's just literally hundreds and hundreds of other plants that are native that I didn't really know very much about. So in going through this, I also learned that a lot of the native plants need special care if you're going to grow them from seeds. And I have a commercial greenhouse at home, which I haven't been using in like 5 years because I thought I was retired. with the native plants, a lot of them have to have the process of winter. They have to have the cold and the moisture in order to germinate in the spring. So in order to raise them from seed, they have to go through that period. It's called stratifying. And so you can do that at home, which my refrigerator's full of them.
Oh, wow.
And they have different periods of time. Some of them only need to be in for 30 days. Others need to be in 60 days and so on. It's a whole process of growing these guys. But the thing about it that's really cool is that once these things are growing in a garden or along the side of the road or whatever, once they're established, they are the most easy care plants you could possibly want. They're, and especially here in Virginia where we have all the clay and we have a lot of moisture, they can grow in ditches and they're drought tolerant. So once you establish them, you have this beautiful garden with easy care. So I like that. So the definition of what a native plant is a plant that is part of the balance of nature that has developed over hundreds or thousands of years in a particular region or ecosystem. Only plants found in this country before European settlement are considered to be natives of the United States. The non-native or alien plant is a plant introduced with human help to a new place or new type of habitat where it was not previously found. So in the years that I was doing landscape design and installation, most of the plants, I would say 90-95% of the plants that are used, that I use and that are used today, are alien plants brought in from foreign countries. So these type of plants don't help our wildlife. They don't help our pollinators. And as I explained, a lot of our native plant eaters are not able to eat the alien plants, and they're not able to reproduce with them. Then the next thing that happened after the little catalog blew me away, I found a book in the library and consequently bought one of my own. It's a great primer for raising these things, bringing nature home, and it's how you can sustain wildlife with native plants. It's a wonderful book for anybody that's interested. And then there he says, choosing native plants fortifies birds and other wildlife and protects them from extinction. Changing the way we think about our gardens and their role in the larger landscape. Now, for the first time in history, gardening has taken on a role that transcends the needs of a gardener. Like it or not, gardeners have become important players in the management of our nation's wildlife. Wow. That, I mean, that, you know, that really hits. And this is a great opportunity for all of us to make a difference. So by this time, I found myself passionately committed to raise native plants. And at home, since we let the clover grow among our grass and we mow less frequently, we have a whole lot more wildlife showing up. And last summer and fall, we had whole families of bunnies that were coming for the clover, you know. We have a family of deer that come twice a day. Now there's four of them that show up every day. And we have squirrels, and we have more variety of birds than I've ever had, and I've been there 21 years. Wow. And we're having birds show up that I've never seen before in my yard. Even robins. I never had robins until this last year. Mm-hmm. Yes, Lavinia?
So our house is full of wildlife always too, but like for the last 2 days in a row, we've heard the fox yell at night.
Awesome.
And it really sounds like a woman shrieking.
I know, yeah.
And we also have a family up here, but it doesn't visit twice a day.
Well, I'll give you a secret. I put corn out for them.
There you go.
So, and they like the bird seeds. I have a very large bird feeder, and so I have a bird seed out, and I put corn out for the deer and whoever wants it.
Too.
That's so really good to help them through winter.
So, I'll tell you how it's squirrel. Okay. Tell you how squirrel food. It's like the birds are light, so they can land on these perches and eat the seed. But a squirrel is heavy, so if they land on it, it'll go down, yep. And then the feeder goes up.
That's smart.
Even if they found some.
Very
cool. Last week they got upside down, but they probably won't do that.
One of the things I really enjoy is we now have three varieties of woodpeckers that show up every day. One is only about this size, and he's black and white with a little red dot on the back of his head. And we have another one this size, and then one in between. And the other day I saw one that looked a little bit different. I thought, well, maybe that's the mate to this big one. And I got to looking in my bird book, and it turns out that wasn't it at all, that it's in the woodpecker family, but it's called a flicker. And she has this kind of a triangular design on her breast, but she looks a whole lot like a woodpecker, and she has some color, but she's a flicker. So I've been learning a whole lot about the birds and the bees and plants, and it's fun. And this next week, I'll be setting out bird houses and nesting balls. Do any of you use nesting balls for your birds? Nesting balls, you can get them online. They're made out of vines and, you know, with openings. They're just, you know. And so what you do is you stuff, you can even use, if you're desperate, you can even use lint from your dryer in there. But I use all kinds of like crochet and knitting threads and things, and you just cut them up and poke them in there, and then the birds can pull them all out. So it helps them with their nesting. And that's fun too. So I have a whole new garden growing too since I got into all of this. I found a nursery in Culpeper that sells native plants, and so the end of last summer I bought, I don't know, about 50 plants and started a whole new garden. They're growing, doing really great, and I have enough seeds that I could probably cover the whole county. Part of them are in my refrigerator. Some of them are growing in my greenhouse, and you know, I had decided to go ahead and turn this into a business rather than just raising them, because I really want to share it with other people. I think if people even put a pot of lavender on their porch, it helps. Small gardens of native plants. One thing I really liked in our community is I noticed in Culpeper, the Rappahannock Electric Company has a huge garden in the front of their building, and then there's a beautiful sign out there, and it says Pollinator Garden, and it has some exclamation. So businesses are starting to pick it up too. To, you know, it's just as easy for them to plant something like that as it is to plant a bunch of alien plants, and eventually, as they establish, they don't require much care at all. So I think that one of my goals would be to see more businesses as well as homeowners start native plants. In fact, now as I go down the road and I look at you know, all the different landscapes, businesses, and homes, I'm looking for native plants to see if people are actually already raising any. Uh-huh. And sadly enough, even out where I live, out in the boonies, I see very few yards with actual native plants growing in them. So it's something that's great to start, you know, encouraging people to do. So my new business is called Going Wild Native Plant Nursery. I originally was going to call it Over the Hill Nursery, you know. And in fact, I even did a design, you know, that had this base and over the hill. And then, you know, because I mean, basically, I'm 81 years old and I'm starting a new business, so I figured Over the Hill. But you know, the more I thought about it, and you have to come over the hill to get to my house. So, but I decided, nah, that didn't say enough about what I wanted to say. I'm not over the hill. So I went with Going Wild.
Where do you live?
I live in Culpeper County in a little town called Jeffersonton. Yeah. It's halfway between Culpeper and Warrenton. So I'm basically dedicated to sharing with others how each of us can make a difference in sustaining our native plants and wildlife. So I found another book. I'm also a book fiend. And I often find books in the library, and then I go home and order them online. Mm-hmm. You know, because some of them are just worth always having. So this one is called Victory Gardens for Bees.
Oh, wow.
Does anyone here know what a victory garden is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Connie?
During the wars, they set aside public spaces so that people could grow food for the community.
Right.
And they still have public gardens in like Reston has a lot of public gardens.
Yeah, there's a lot of, see a lot of community gardens around in towns. I just wanted to read you the introduction with this one from this book. More than half a century ago, the threat of widespread famine loomed among the many terrors of World Wars I and II. Yet instead of resigning themselves to scarcity, citizens rolled up their sleeves. In 1943, North America alone had victory gardens in backyards, window boxes, patio planters, schoolyards, parks, and government grounds, with nearly 9 million tons of food. much of it coaxed from the ground by people who had never before grown a carrot or a cauliflower.
Wow.
So only by planting a surge of victory gardens for bees will we resolve the desperate famine of forage and shelter faced by pollinators. As we each pick up a shovel and seeds to create victory gardens for bees, we literally hold the fruitfulness of earth in our hands. And these are some photos of signs that were put in people's yards back in the 1940s. We have new signs today. There's a whole lot of them out for pollinators and bees. There's Save the Bees and pollinator gardens and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of activity actually going around in North America with this whole thing of promoting the native plant gardens and especially the pollinator plants. Did you know that approximately 20,000 different species of birds are around the world? Over 9,000 in North America. I had no idea until I read this. Over one-third of our food crops and 80% of flowering plants are pollinated by bees. And who are the pollinators? Birds, bats, butterflies, moths, flies, beetles, wasps, small mammals, and most importantly, the bees. They visit flowers to drink nectar or feed off of pollen and transport pollen grains as they move from spot to spot. I even learned that beehives are rented out to commercial growers. I read something on Facebook just a couple of days ago about a bee grower in, what do you call them?
Beekeeper,
that's it. A beekeeper in Arizona rents his beehives to an almond grove in California.
Wow.
So they get pollinated that way. So evidently there weren't enough in California to support them. As bee habits become increasingly fragmented, even small links between bee-friendly landscapes make a big difference. Bees that travel long distances to forage, such as honeybees and bumblebees, can get stranded if there are not enough resources of nectar to give them the energy to return home to their nests. And as I said, if you add only a single pot of lavender, you'll be helping to sustain them. Mm-hmm. Planting native pollinator plants in your yard also helps sustain the migrating birds and butterflies. So, another book. I didn't bring this one today because it was a brand new in the library and I could only check it out for 2 weeks and I hadn't gotten around to buying it yet. But this book was called Never Too Old to Get Rich by Carrie Hannon. And it's about finding passion, purpose, and a paycheck. So even though this book is basically donated or it's basically focused on people that are 40 years old and older, starting new careers or starting new businesses or making changes in their life. It works for any age. I don't see any reason to pinpoint it to any particular age. And the book is full of all kinds of really great ideas and uplifting stories about different people and what they've done and at different ages. I just chose one that I thought was a really neat one to focus on. And her name is Carol Nash. She's age 74. And she founded Bernadette's House, which is an early intervention and prevention service through an after-school mentoring program for girls 8 to 17. And Carol says, if I can make a difference in the life of one child, then I believe I have fulfilled the purpose here. So there, she's got the passion and the purpose, and she's getting funding, regular funding for her business. And she says her lessons learned: you're never too old to serve others. Always stay humble. You must walk the talk for others to believe in your vision. Never give up. Reaching your goal is just a matter of time. When dealing with criticism, keep your focus on your mission and vision. Visions are refined, not changed. Refine your vision and revise your plan if necessary. And now she used a vision board, and we know about vision boards thanks to Gail. Don't sacrifice your character, personal relationships, or integrity for your vision. Learn to balance your life. Maintain your peace. Never be afraid to fail. Keep believing. Stay focused and true to your vision, and you will succeed. And now, from our chapter, remember to tell your story as you want it to be, as you feel it and see it in your heart. Follow your own passion and purpose, and know that the infinite power of the universe is guiding you to your greatest good. As for me, I have found a new purpose and passion that motivates me every day to share with others. Plants growing, wildlife thriving, landscaping taking on a whole new beautiful look. What could be better? Life is good. So I wanted to close with reading you from the back of the book. As Connie mentioned in her talk last time around, that the book is kind of a two-part. Is the beginning is the basic principles of science and mind, and then in the back there's more. How would you say it, Connie? The back part. It's more in depth.
Right. It's more specific.
More specific. Yeah. This one is on the spiritual approach to making money. And it says that spirit fills all space and animates every form. Therefore, spirit is a true actor in everything. But spirit can only act for you by acting through you. This means simply that God can only give you what you can take. As you daily enter into your divine inheritance, with your thought and your heart, you enter into the realm of absolute causation. Completely believe that from the secret place of the Most High within you, an objective manifestation of your every legitimate desire is projected. Are you really accepting abundance? Is your thought really animating your experience with the idea of plenty? Are you affirming that divine substance is forever flowing to you as supply? And then he says, say, I praise the abundance of all things. I animate everything with the idea of abundance. I am remembering only the good. I am expecting more good. I am experiencing good. I acknowledge that the Spirit is working everywhere. I give thanks that the right action of Spirit is flowing into my experience in ever-increasing volume. There is that within me which sees, knows, and understands this truth, which completely accepts it. There is good enough to go around. Therefore, I do not withhold that good from myself or others, but constantly proclaim spiritual abundance is forever flowing to each and all as supply. And now accept as mine all that is needed to make my life a joyous experience. And so it is.
So it is.